This podcast is a quest for well-being, a quest for a meaningful life through the exploration of fundamental truth. Enlightening ideas, insights on physical, mental, and spiritual health. The inspiration is love. The aspiration is to awaken new ways of thinking that can lead us to a new way of being. Being well. Welcome to Body, Mind, and Soul Healing Conversations.
Throughout Ellen's 30 years in the industry, the secret ingredient that connected her to her clients wasn't just the food. It was that she crafted her meals like medicine and listened when their needs, goals changed. Whether Ellen's clients were dealing with acne or autoimmune issues, her health-minded recipes would nourish more than their hunger. She has experienced firsthand how our digestive system directly impacts our lives. And it changed the old "you are what you eat" mentality to a mindset focused on "you are what you can digest." Ellen's mission is to help you improve your gut health so you feel your healthiest, mind, body, and spirit. In her latest book, Gut Driven, and her three-week Reset 90-10 program, Ellen breaks it down and gives you the roadmap to heal your body, achieve balance, and reset your relationship with food. Valeria interviews Ellen Postolowski. She is the author of Gut Driven, Jumpstart Digestive Health to Nourish Body, Mind, and Spirit. As a health-focused chef, Ellen lives by the well-known motto, "Let food be thy medicine." It is obvious that eating more fruits and vegetables is in your best interest, but simply knowing that is not enough. By embracing the connection between self-care, better choices, enhanced gut health, cognitive functions, and hormonal balance, we begin to heal. Plus, food inspires. It gives us the opportunity to create and gather in community, to enjoy the flavors each season brings. Meet Ellen at chefellen.com. Here's the interview with Ellen Postolowski.
Hello, Ellen. As I mentioned off record, I usually open all my interviews with the question of who you are in your own words. But today, for some reason, I want to ask you a different question. So first, I want to introduce you briefly, as sometimes I do. So you are a chef, author. Actually, I want to mention your book title. So you're the author of Gut Driven, Jumpstart Digestive Health to Nourish Body, Mind, and Spirit. And you're also a certified holistic health educator. So this is my brief introduction, but it's an interesting question to ask. I have been realizing recently, why do you do this work, this beautiful work that you do?
Well, thank you, first of all, for having me today. I have been a chef, a nutrition-based chef for over 30 years. So that nourishing the body was always a big part of my life. And I did that for my clients for a long time. Not too long ago, I would say like 7 years ago, I definitely felt a need for change. And I figured, you know, as I got older, I wanted to get out of the kitchen more and coach clients one-on-one. So I went back to school for integrative nutrition, focusing more on body, mind, and spirit, and alternative therapies. And but in that, in the interim, I was diagnosed with severe osteoporosis at 51, and so that was a debilitating news. And you know, according to Dr. Google, I had one foot in the grave. And I went to a place where, you know, after the fear, I went to a place of willingness, I guess. And I wanted to, figure out why all these things were happening. And, you know, as I was in school, I realized that integrative approach, you know, body, mind, and spirit, was something that helped me, and, you know, advocating for my own health, because I feel though that in the United States, we tend to, or I learned from going to, you know, with that diagnosis, right away, they wanted to put me on long-term meds, and I was having different issues with, you know, sleepless nights and, you know, gut issues and not assimilating nutrients from the food I was eating. So, you know, little did I know I would become my first client. And so when I started advocating better for myself and found a good team of doctors that would listen to me, and like I said, I was realizing that in the United States, we tend to treat chronic and acute illness with meds off the, you know, similarly. So as I started to focus more on my health, and as I was in school at the same time, and I, like I said, I became my first client, it was empowering for me. And I felt like I needed to, so I focused, I gravitated toward gut and hormonal health in school right away, stayed in school for two additional years, and that became a passion for me. So I saw that as an opportunity to spread a message that I became very passionate about, because I didn't want to be on long-term meds. I saw the implications of being on long-term meds, and so it was about spreading a message. I think that's why I became so passionate about, you know, writing another book and then doing what I do and passing that information along. But it just gave me, by becoming my own health advocate, it gave me this new strength and confidence to heal and then shift my career. So, you know, like I said, craving a change, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. True.
it just happened in a very odd way, but I embraced it.
Wow, Ellen. So it has everything to do with your experience, your firsthand experience. Yeah, sure. That makes a lot of sense. And usually it connects us deeper to the message. There's something about experience that supersedes anything else, you know, because we can easily believe in whatever it is. Beliefs are so easy to be adopted, but there is something about experience that it's so much more profound. So I love to hear that, although I already knew, I read in your bio on your website. But something else that caught my attention. So your latest book, we've been collaborating on your book, Gut Health. Talk to me a bit more about the importance of digesting food properly. You said something that caught my attention too. You said we need to change the old you are what you eat mentality to the mindset focused more on you are what you can digest. The first time I heard that, it just stopped me. I paused for a moment, contemplating the truth behind this, because I know from experience too. So for those who don't know, why is it so important to digest our food properly?
Yeah, that information kind of blew me away too, because as a health focused chef and, you know, someone who walked the talk, I spent good money on quality food and I ate well. But when I was seeing different doctors in my journey, you know, there were some good and some okay. You know, I tried to take something positive from every experience, but one doctor I was working with in particular, there was something in my blood work that said, you know, one doctor had said to me, you know, you need to eat more protein. And it showed up on my blood mark, you know, on my my blood work. And I was talking to a different doctor and I said, you know, this is really concerning me. And he's like, Ellen, this is just a number. This is a stamp in time. And he's like, you could eat all the protein that you want, but he's like, if you're not digesting it properly, then your efforts are fruitless. So that really hit home for me. So, you know, like I said, I was not assimilating nutrients and I was eating well. So that, you know, how could I go on, because the doctors, you know, certain endocrinologists wanted me to go on bone meds right away. And, you know, my question to them was, well, how am I going to absorb medicine if I'm not even absorbing food correctly? So I needed to get to the root. And with chronic illness and autoimmune, it's usually multifaceted, you know, factors that are contributing to an illness. So that was one of my, I have three principles in my book with my program. I have a program called the Reset 90-10. And the first one is, you are only as healthy as the food you can digest. So if you're not digesting your food properly, and that could be for any number of reasons, which I break down in the book with the science behind gut health, a very like comprehensive guide, breaking down science in a more layman's terms. But yeah, that is my number one. I say that a lot to a lot of different people, because, you know, everyone thinks like, well, if I do this, if I do that, then I'm, you know, everything's going to be fixed within, you know, everyone wants quick fixes, yes. But it really is a journey. Mm. And that is something that is very important with digestive health.
Yes. That's what I love about your work. It's holistic. So as you mentioned about illnesses, especially chronic illnesses, it's not just one thing, one factor. There are many factors. And that's the same thing for health, right, Ellen? There are many factors, not just one. So I guess for those who are curious to know about digestive health, it was my case many years ago. I thought that probiotics would solve my problem. If I took a good probiotic, then I would be okay. So is that a myth? Or I know we have to buy your book and read it. Most people who are curious about that really know everything about it. But just as a teaser, in a way, talk to me about probiotics. Do they really work?
I think they work for certain situations. So we have trillions of bacteria in our gut microbiome. And the probiotics that we buy in the store, half of them are probably not good. You know, when it comes to a quality issue, testing, there's probiotics are a billions of dollar market. Yeah. You know, advertising, marketing is very alluring. I think that probiotics can help people in certain situations, but we have so many different strands of bacteria in our bodies. So it was explained to me this way. Your colon is 18 feet long or so, like goes through your body, twists and turns. The bacteria that we're probably trying to address could be very deep in our colon. And I think I try to encourage my clients to eat more. So in the United States, they say that less than 5% of Americans get their daily recommended intake of fiber. And fiber gives us prebiotics. So prebiotics help feed. We have good gut bacteria in our bodies. And what often happens is that there's an imbalance of good to bad bacteria. And anything like stress will alter that. You know, food poisoning, a standard American diet, things like that can cause dysbiosis, which is what an imbalance of good to bad gut bacteria is. So I try to, you know, I leave that more to medical professionals to determine that if you need a good probiotic. But I encourage my clients more to eat more fiber to fertilize the good gut bacteria. Yeah. Bacteria, which is what prebiotics do. And if you look at it as more of a fertilizer for the probiotics, then you could probably get a little further without the use of probiotics. Because I don't think you really want to be on them on a daily basis or a long-term basis. But I don't think that they're a bad thing. I think that they, you know, at one point I did take them But I try to focus more on the plant diversity, which is where we get that those strains of the good bacteria, the short chain fatty acids, which ferment in our stomach and feed the good bacteria. I break it down in a way like what happens when we eat our food. So once it hits our mouth, we have digestive enzymes, small intestine, it goes through that process. So it's very interesting if you want to learn more about what your body does when you eat food. But I think there's a time and place for it. I think that's probably the best answer. And I think that with certain testing, you could probably determine what strands your body might benefit from more.
Because bodies are different, right, Ellen?
Everybody is different. We are all unique with our bodies. We have unique physiologies. And more attention should be brought to the fact that one size does not fit all. And especially with probiotics.
Gosh. Yeah, this is also very fresh, very new to me. I do take probiotics. You just mentioned not every day, right? It's not a good idea to take them long term. Actually, anything when it comes to supplements. I heard that before too. Not to depend on them.
There's different theories. And, you know, like these are all theories that are, I was spending a lot of money on probiotics and taking them daily. And, it really, you know, when I was at my worst, it really wasn't doing anything for me. So it's interesting to know. And, you know, after seeing certain doctors and finding ones that actually spent more than 5 minutes in the office with me and explained this in great detail, you know, I definitely give props to different doctors in my journey in my book. And there were ones that were, you know, it was so eye-opening. And like I said, I take positive experiences from every doctor, you know, whether or not I continue to go with them. But there were ones that, you know, definitely helped me understand this journey so much better and, you know, look at what I was doing. I remember I opened up my cabinet once and I'm like, I don't even know what I'm taking anymore. I had so many supplements and so, you know, we get very caught up in, you know, marketing and social media and this person says they took that or this and it helped them.
Right. So true. That's really wonderful to know that there are some doctors that they're also educators, right? They try to empower their patients.
Well, definitely.
That's wonderful. Really, really wonderful to know.
Yeah. It is wonderful.
And it's what you're doing too, Ellen. As a chef, you are educating others, empowering them. So it's not, they depend on their own truth. So they find what works for them. And even if they don't need us anymore, you anymore, it's okay. You have done your work. That shows integrity to me, but it's also a spiritual thing. I guess I always go back to spirituality, because that's where I come from with my perspective of the world, my perception that everything is connected. So if we harm ourselves, we're harming. If we harm others, we're harming ourselves. So because everything's so not so connected, it is it's one essence from my perspective. So that resonates with the soul. Speaking of that, I love the post that you sent to me that relates to the messages in your book too. But and you speak of spiritual wellness there. So I can't wait to get to that point. I know we have some others before. So the blog it's a post called Wellness. This is on your website too. It's titled What Encompasses the Quest for Health. You talk about mindset, balance. What really can get us to that point of live what we call health and wellness? What are the components? So you outline them here very clearly to me. And you say, I highlighted some passages here that caught my attention. You said, developing skills and the best mindset explores finding balance and progress in every aspect of wellness. So the skills to do what we need to do. And you talk a lot about mindset. So having that you see the healthy perspective. It's almost more important than following healthy advice and suggestions, because if we don't have the foundation, it will just crumble. Most people don't follow programs for that reason too. So you're addressing the foundation, which is crucial. So anything else? I love the way you talk about self-care. We talked about this before in, I think, two conversations that we had previously. So you say sensible self-care is your responsibility and a healthy approach to wellness. So this is an underlying kind of theme in your work, self-care, mm-hmm. balance, mindset. So I guess, I know you answered that question before, but because this is a new conversation, talk to me for a moment about self-care again. What is your understanding of self-care these days? Have you updated it in any way since we talked?
Well, I think, you know, I always say that as someone who, worked with clients and, as a private chef, and, you know, you can eat well, and if you exercise daily, like it seemed like that was it. Like, you know, oh, okay, I thought I had it all figured out until I didn't. And I, you know, in my occupation, it was, I figured that, you know, when I got sick, I felt like I was always taking care of others first. And I kind of ignored my own health or put it to the back burner until it was more convenient. And so that reflection for me, you know, while I was in school and learned about body, mind, and spirit, you know, I heard that word like thrown around a lot and often perceived it as selfish. You know, everyone's talking about self-care, but then I realized like, all right, you're not giving yourself enough self-care. You know, I think you have to put on your oxygen mask first before you can help other people. So for me, that was like, that was a big step for getting more self-care into my life, because I was in an occupation where I worked on weekends and I worked nights. And then the minute somebody texted me and said, you know, I need this or that, I would drop everything. And it didn't matter, you know, if I had plans, like it was just so I was lacking. And I found, you know, there for me, self-care is balance. And there was a big lack of balance in my life. So, and then it goes to mindset. So I needed to change my mindset and focus more on my needs, because, you know, this is the one body I have in my life. And if I'm not taking care of it, who's going to, you know? So mm-hmm. then that goes to the foundation, mm-hmm. and my foundation was obviously crumbling. And that's why in the book, you know, I say, like, if you have a solid foundation and if you start making some changes, you want them to be sustainable. You want them to be long-term. But without the right mindset, it's usually short-lived. And I feel like a lot of people want a quick fix, and it's just not a quick fix. You know, it's this journey that we take. And I think it's because as I get older, and, you know, I was only 51 when I was diagnosed, and I was like, I'm too young to be told that I have the bones of an 80-year-old, because like, you know, when you look at that prognosis, like it's not good. So, it forced me to a place where, I either change things and change my mindset, and started taking care of myself. And that, you know, then all of a sudden, like, self-care clicked for me. Like, it is my responsibility and it is my approach now. And wellness is important in my life. Mm-hmm. So, like I say, it's a buzzword that's used, but to understand it. So I do talk about that in the book a lot and break down, you know, what does it mean to you? Because like I said, you know, it may mean something different. because we're all dealing with different things. And, you know, if I have someone that I need to take care of, and, you know, like, we all have our parents that are aging, and I do better. Like, I don't want to take care of somebody else with resentment. Mm. You know, I want to do it in a loving, caring way. So if I take care of myself and I feel good, then I, you know, then I'm doing things with a loving heart. And,
yes.
And then, so that goes to, you know, physical wellness and emotional wellness and spiritual, like, you can check off so many different boxes with, you know, what encompasses, you know, that quest is, you know, I think what I subtitled that post on wellness.
Yeah. Yes. You do have all of them here. This is my next question, the breakdown of what it is, you know, cause it seems like you're right. We all have different ideas, different understandings of what these pieces are, like physical wellness. I know you have also explained here, I have in front of me, but without script, what is in a simple way, if you could, I would love for you to explain what they are from your perspective, and then we can talk about it. So the first one is physical wellness.
Well, I think, so physically, you know, our bodies, you know, what they need, whether that's essentials like food, water, and exercise, which is, you know, always on the top of the list. But I think it goes deeper, you know, how are you nourishing your body? Are you doing it in a good way, or are you doing it in a, you know, unfavorable way? And that could be with, you know, diet or, you know, alcohol, smoking, things that you know that you probably should keep to a minimum, I guess, you know, because like we all want to be fun and flexible and not so rigid with rules, but rest is really important. Like I have heard from so many people that they do not sleep well. And some people love the fact that they can, I think rest is very important. And I think in creating an environment where you get the proper rest is part of that physical wellness. Movement is very important, and it doesn't have to be excessive exercise. It's moving your body. They say movement and fiber intake are one of the biggest contributors to ill gut health. So it's just getting up and stretching. You know, if you don't move, you know, you don't use it, you lose it, right? So keeping your body fit is also going to contribute to that emotional wellness. So I think, like, if you take the different aspects of physical, you know, preventative care and apply that to, you know, aging well. And it's, most people don't think about it until like something, you know, happens, and everyone is on this quest to be fit. But there's just so many different aspects of that physical wellness that I think that, you know, and it goes back to mindfulness too, you know, like, are you building on good habits, or are you, you know, going in the opposite direction, physical wellness? I hope that explains it.
Yes. It makes a lot of sense to me. The foundation, what can lead to physical wellness? I guess another question related to physical wellness would be, what does it feel like when we are physically well? Would you say, I have my ideas here, high energy levels, for example, painless body, a sense of happiness, contentment, calm. Would you explain this way, Ellen, in a way or differently?
I think that a calm, happy, well-balanced person, but I think that you can, I think we tend to normalize a lot of physical ailments too. And I bring a lot of attention to that too. You know, because a lot of times if you are someone that says has acid reflux, which a lot of people tend to have, I think they say 70 million people in the United States have at least one digestive issue. So it's a physical ailment, but we tend to ignore it, normalize it, or band-aid it with things like medications. Right. So are you really paying attention to your physical wellness? Is a good question. Are you normalizing symptoms? Are you band-aiding them? Because, you know, for years I had acid reflux and, you know, I trusted my doctors, and this was when I was in my 20s, to, you know, oh, you're just going to, you know, take this medication and it'll get rid of it. And that's a long-term meds. I mean, anything longer than 3 weeks is considered long-term medicine, and long-term meds have implications. You know, there's gastrointestinal effects, there's cardiovascular, there's kidney impairment. So those are all affecting your physical wellness. It's not something that's really brought to anybody's attention, but it affects our physical wellness because it, you know, it didn't happen to me right away, but down the road, it caught up to me. You know, being on meds lowered my stomach acid, lowered my digestive enzymes. And those are the reasons why I wasn't breaking down food. And, you know, for me, it went to, I was anxious all the time, and that's physical and that's emotional. It probably hits other spiritual too, you know, like I think it just, it's a snowball effect of things that we don't realize happening in our body. So that's why when I wrote that, you know, it always morphs into something more. I'm like, wow, there's so much more to this that we can really talk about.
Oh my God.
So we, you know, there at, with integrative nutrition, there's primary food and secondary food, and primary food is, you know, what feeds you in life. And that's, you know, could be spirituality, career, relationships, your work environment. And, but then it's, you know, secondary food is the food on our plate. So, you know, creating that life balance is what I want my readers to explore and to see if, you know, what needs improvements and, you know, what do you feel good about?
Yeah, I remember when we talked about this, how I loved the concept of primary and secondary foods. That is, it makes so much sense to me. I think I probably mentioned that, that when I am in a flow doing something that I really love, I forget about eating. That is, that's just a fact. It has been my experience eating food, because it feels like something else is being fed. So we could call it the soul, the probably also the emotional body, in who knows, the energetic body too. So it's so true. And you're right. Not too many people talk about that.
For me, it was, you know, working as a chef. It was, you know, I was too busy to stop and eat. And I remember one of my clients saying, like, why don't you ever stop for lunch? And I was like, it's okay, you know. I was running back and forth, just shoving something in my food. So like, there was no mindfulness there. I couldn't even tell you what I ate 20 minutes later. It was just, you know, so I wasn't nourishing properly. I wasn't digesting it properly. You know, spoiler alert, in, you know, something in the book too, is that, you know, you're not going to digest your food properly if you are upset. If you're running around, like, you really need to sit, chew your food, and be mindful of what you're eating, because so many of us, you know, even eating in the car, it's just like something quick that we think we need to do just to get to the next step. And I remember one of my teachers in school, like, and she was a mentor for me, but she always talked about how when she ate, she would get out her prettiest plate and put her food on it and sit down. And I was so envious. Yeah, like, that's awesome. I don't do something like that, you know, but I remember it. And I always go, I do take out a pretty plate mm-hmm. now. And I think about her and I, you know, I'm grateful that she gave me that wisdom, mm-hmm. you know, because I apply it now in my own life and I remember and I'm like, you know what, I can make time to mm-hmm. do that.
And it sounds so simple, doesn't it, Ellen? It sounds simple. So
right. Simple. Right. It is. Mm-hmm. It can be. We tend to, you know, and that's part of like the dedication to your health is that, you know, it might be a challenge to make these changes and we're all afraid of changes, but yeah. like, you know, if mm. you are, if you don't make a change, like I say, if you change nothing, nothing will change. Yeah. So think about that, you know, like how does that apply mm. to, you know, what your goals are or what you'd like to make different in your life?
Yes. Yes. A billion times. So that's truth. And that kind of already, you in a way, you're already talking about describing the intellectual wellness, being open, right? Mm-hmm. Creativity, adding something new to mm-hmm. your life. Oh, what's not to love about that? But I wanted to make a comment about what you said about physical health when I tried to get the picture of what it looks like being physically well. And you quickly put that to sleep in a way. Because it's not really high energy. You know, people might be taking some artificial kind of unhealthy foods, might be drinking, like there's a lot of energy drinks. They are not good for us. But then they seem mm-hmm. to have a lot of energy. But it's temporary, as you said.
It's temporary.
So,
mm-hmm. it's not sustainable.
Yes, right. So those are not good signs of physical wellness. That so it's a lot more subtle, and it seems like in a way we are the only ones who really know if we are physically well or not, right? If you're mm-hmm. not taking medications, we are not taking anything. Like I don't drink coffee. I remember every time I had coffee, I didn't feel well. It just gave me energy, mm-hmm. but at the same time I had headaches and I felt anxious. Like I was having an anxiety attack every time mm-hmm. I had caffeine. So when I stopped, it just changed everything at that level. It was a huge step to take. So wow, you really kind of pausing me with that here now. So in a way, does it make sense to you that we will be the only ones to really know when we are physically well because we know what we are doing to the body?
Right. And how many of us ignore those feelings? Like I can attest to the to feeling the same way with, like I didn't realize how anxious I was until a doctor wrote it in my portal. In my portal, Ellen is very anxious. Yes. I thought I hit it so well, you know, but yeah. it was an eye opener for me. And so, it's the reason I designed my program to, the reset program was to eliminate, you know, potential inflammatory foods, caffeine being one of them.
Yes.
Because when people do eliminate that for a 3-week period, just to get a, you know, just to get a jump start on what could potentially be causing ailments or symptoms, you know, whatever it is that someone comes to me for, they start to feel, I mean, aches and pains. Mm. People have aches and pains and all of a sudden, you know, it's gone right. after 3 weeks. Mm. So, you know, do you keep that going? You know, yes, I want you to keep that going. I want you to eventually design your own maintenance program that works for you. And it sounds like you did on your own by figuring out that caffeine was not probably in your best
right.
interest.
Yes, yes. So in a way too, Ellen, is not actually adding things, but eliminating it, removing mm-hmm. right some of the things that we are adding, we are having that we think that's beneficial. Just because, like in my case, I think I take too many supplements. I take multivitamin, complex B, vitamin D, omega 3, and I think it's too many. I was taking, you know, the other day I just watched a documentary about mushrooms and how powerful they are for our health. Mm-hmm. And then I quickly got like tons of mushroom supplements and started taking them Oh, you have no idea. My belly was was in pain. Like every morning I would wake up with this very bad pain in my belly. And I had no idea why. And I kept taking these things. And then when I stopped, the pain went away. Now I know why. Mm. So that's...
There could be something in it too that was... there could be an additive or something, right. You know, that was in there that was just causing distress for you.
Right.
Mm. I would love to be supplement free and not rely on them. But, you know, that's why I encourage regular testing and proactive care and, you know, to be on top of your health by, you know, regular visits, you know, yearly visits, whatever that means for you. But, you know, remember that blood markers are wonderful resources, but they're a stamp in time. You know, you might be low on feeling brain fog and you could be low on B6 or something and just need like a little supplement for a short while and you feel better. I mean, sometimes too many Bs can keep us up at night too, some people take them and don't take them at the right time. I address that. I address a lot of health considerations and it's just food for thought in the end of my book when I talk about supplements and different ailments, you know, like celiac or osteoporosis for me and, you know, the timing of the medication, which was so important because I finally found one doctor who was so happy that I didn't start medications right away. And his, you know, whole thing was like, this is timing, you know. And your gut should be in order for you to start something like this. So, you know, with supplements, I think there's so much, like, you know, you pick that up right away. I mean, I've done the same thing. I'm like, oh, I need that. I have to get that.
Yes, right? Yeah, we're so influenced by. Well, I don't watch mainstream TV, so these things are not coming from mainstream people. The scientists who, they talk a lot about emotional health too. And I usually like combining them, whatever it's good for the physical body and for the emotional body. So I'm always thinking that way, not just one thing. Mm-hmm. So it has to be good for the brain too. So I guess mushrooms, they talked so much about it. But as you said before.
Well, they're wonderful.
Yeah, they are, right, Ellen? I don't know, maybe. And this company, you know, the scientist behind it, he's very reputable, somebody that it seemed to be trusted. But maybe I'm allergic to them. Who knows? Like you said.
Maybe.
Right?
Maybe you took too many.
Yes, I did.
At one time. There's so many. Yeah, there's so many different ways to look at that.
Yes.
But yeah, it might be something. You could have an allergy. I don't know. Or maybe there could be something. Maybe you could send them a message. Maybe you're taking too much, too soon.
That's a good idea. And I love your suggestion about the exams too, the blood work. It has been a long time since I have done that. So they might be, I should have one done. It has been, I think, 5 years or more. Because I usually rely on my own body, like to tell me what's not working, what is working. But a lot of times it takes too long, you know, for the mind to believe that it's something that I'm taking or eating that's not working. And I think that was, I think that's a message for me too, something that I need to learn. When the body's in pain, I should just kind of start eliminating things immediately instead of waiting. I think I waited too long. So let's talk about intellectual wellness. I know I already mentioned here, talked about creativity being open, but what is your, I guess I would love to, your own perspective. Like what do you have been, I know you wrote a book that's so very creative, but what else, Ellie, in your own life, how have you been applying this intellectual wellness?
Great question. I think by listening to my craving for change and going back to school, learning for me, like if I could just be in school all the time, I would be really happy with that because I just love the information. And of course, around the wellness community and the holistic and the way the body works. Like, I find it fascinating. I think that last year I went to Italy and I all of a sudden I wanted to learn how to speak Italian before I went. So that could be, I mean, that's intellectual wellness, you know, just doing something outside of the norm of what you do, you know, expanding horizons, going to, my husband and I just started playing Scrabble again, like lately, you know. So it fires off a different part of your brain and brings in, you know, something different where you're nurturing, you know, that creative side of your brain. So it could be really anything, you know, more involvement with like community or volunteering more. You know, you're out in the world and you're communicating with people. And I think, especially during COVID, it seems like everyone's like really happy staying home lately. Is what I feel like. And just getting, you know, we're so used to being home that sometimes it's a chore, and I'm guilty of it myself. Like, just to get up and go out, and you know, went into the city recently to the Botanical Gardens, and it's like, you know, to see a show there or something. Like, you're just expanding your horizons and seeing some beauty outside of the norm, or, you know, seeing beauty through someone else's eyes at like an art show, or, you know, looking at something and, you know, different music. I have a friend who's a musician, and he always said, like, you know, the way his music is and the way that someone else sees it are two different things. So it evokes something in you that is just different from somebody else. And I think that's expanding your mind and stimulating views and the ways that you think. And so that's really my breakdown of intellectual wellness.
Yes.
I'm sure I could say more things about
it. It sounds simple, but
I guess it's subjective to different people, you know, what that would entail. But, you know, it's just stimulating your mind and getting those creative juices to flow, and you know, being open to different things, learning a new language or going back to school and starting something new. And, you know, it's scary, but I think it's so rewarding.
Yes. How's your Italian these days, Ellen?
Not too good.
You see, it's all about the fun, isn't it? Not perfection, that's for sure. Oh, it's a beautiful language. Beautiful language.
Yeah, it is a beautiful language.
So,
a beautiful place.
Oh, yes, I've never been there. God, my husband can't wait to go there. He's like, he's Greek, but everybody thinks that he's Italian because he loves the culture.
So pretty.
So it is about doing something different, but that we can open up to some fun, isn't it? Like I just mentioned, it's not really about perfection, but it's just doing something that can open our hearts, that can make us feel inspired. I think there's something about inspiration too.
Sure.
And you just kind of made me think about purpose, to that sense of purpose, you know, because that comes from a place of joy. There's something about having this sense of purpose, of calling, of mission in life that, I don't know, it feels incredible for the mind, body, and soul, for all the aspects of being human. I don't know. That's my, I know you didn't mention purpose here, but I think it would fit that into intellectual wellness too, right, Ellen? I think.
Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, by doing all those things, like, you know, with me going back to school, like, it gave me this new purpose, like, out of the blue. So it is, it's a great way to, great word to throw in there.
Yeah, the sense of purpose, right? Yeah. Mission, and for sure.
Because, and once you, and like coming out of a, you know, getting out of your comfort zone is a struggle, but, you know, it is that having a purpose like that, where it's so, and I felt it so strongly. I said I would never write another book. And all of a sudden one day I'm like, I'm going to write another book.
Yes. You see, yeah, it's stronger than.
It took over.
Yes. Yeah. You know?
Right.
In a way, I know that's the way I see life. It's just life itself creating its own desires through us humans and then fulfilling them, you know, because it creates the desire because it knows how to fulfill them. But I know we take ownership, you know, that we did. I did. But I don't know. There's something about life itself that's it's always very supportive of itself and always making this experience interesting and fun. What's not to love about it? I think it's very unnatural not to love life. It's, I know some people, they are depressed, and I was for a long time, and some people commit suicide and all that, or kill other people, and all the violence that we see here in the world now with the wars and all that. That's so unnatural to me. It's so unnatural. Okay, that's part of spiritual wellness. We're not there yet. I'll go back to emotional wellness. So what's that? What is emotional wellness, Ellen, from your own lens?
So stress comes to mind right away for me, because I think checking in with like everyday stressors and being able to handle them in a quick way, because stress is part of our life. It's inevitable. But how well do you handle those everyday stressors? So it's learning how to relax quicker, or I talk about the vagus nerve, which is like the longest running nerve connecting our gut and our brain and our body, like a sensory nerve. So it really regulates how quickly we can relax or move away from a stressful situation. With ill, like gut health, there's almost like a connection in a wheel that should be like spinning effortlessly. So, and then that affects cognitive functions. So, being able to express your emotions in a healthy way is something that is emotional. You know, do you see a therapist? You know, some people like to do that. You know, do you punch a pillow? Do you go and, you know, go for a walk and then calm your mind down? I used to like go for like a 20-minute run, and I would come back and I'm like, whew, okay, I'm good now. But it's about becoming more emotionally balanced, I guess, and embracing like those self-care acts where you find out what works for you, what doesn't. And, you know, emotional well-being is a really important part of wellness. And it doesn't have to be, you know, like I said, if therapy is not something that you can't, you don't have the means to do that. I mean, there's so many different, there's apps, there's meditation apps now out there. There's mantras, there's things on YouTube you can listen to. Like I found like some great ways to, and things that resonate with you, like things that resonate with me. I name a couple different ways or things that I've listened to and connect, you know, link them in the book. It could be a yoga class, you know, that, you know, connects your body and mind. So emotionally you leave there feeling like a different person. It could be, you know, a sauna, but you know, that's physical, emotional, like it all ties together that way too, physical. But yeah, it's really about expressing your emotions. I mean, you could go out with a friend and a good friend that you can trust and tell her all your woes and you can end up, you know, laughing together by the end of the night, and you feel like a much better person. So you keep like those people close to you. It's it's the people that drain you that you want to kind of put up a boundary around you know, are forever negative. So that all, it really connects to your emotional well-being.
Wow, that's a big one, emotional well-being, wellness. That's a big, big, big one. And it's true. I love, you know, the piece of laughter. You mentioned that too when you wrote the article. So there's something about laughter and stress. They cannot really coexist. I noticed that, right? We can't really laugh and be stressed at the same time. So there's something about that. Another thing that you said, I love this here. You say, when we are more emotionally balanced, we can accept and love ourselves and those around us. So that's a very good way of measuring, right, Ellen? Emotional wellness.
Very true.
Love and acceptance.
And it goes back to, you know, doing things in a loving way, you know, without resentment.
Yeah, that really says a lot. Yes, a billion times to that truth. So it's very clear to me, emotional wellness, especially when you describe it that way. Yeah, love and acceptance of self and others. That really, there's something about inner peace. I love the idea of contentment, inner peace, inner calm. But there is we can't, it's not really something that can be expressed. It's very personal too, and it could be something that it's very subtle. But there's something about the expression of acceptance and love that it's a lot more concrete in a way. It's it's just, it's not as abstract as the concept of inner peace that I really love too.
And then when you are emotionally balanced, I mean, you are going to project that peace and love, you know, around you. You know, we've all come in contact with someone who's raging and, you know, upset, and that energy transfers right away, you know, like that. Say, whoa.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay, let's take a step back.
Yes, we wish that we would have, like, I don't know, some sort of just a magic wand, but some sort of way of giving somebody this medicine, right, of emotional wellness when they need most. Mm-hmm. But that's not something that I don't think something that can be done. It's what you said is very much the truth, you know, that most therapists talk about. It's as a practice. It's expressing emotions and feelings, not suppressing them. That's very dangerous. So I don't know. I think people who rage like that, like was my case, I was very angry for a while. That had to do with my past of childhood abuse, and I was repressing, I was suppressing all that emotion. So it just didn't work. I was trying to hide it and look as happy as I could from the outside, but I was so unhappy. Then, you know, at some point I would just kind of burst into some sort of anger, what do you call it?
Rage.
Yeah, I don't think it was. I hope that was not. I hope that was not rage, Ellen. But I don't think I went that far. I think it's not in me to get that far. But yeah, probably something similar. You're funny.
Well, yeah. I think. Like, I tend to like. I feel like I work on it, but like bottling up things, like you say, and you know. Whatever trauma, like so many, like trauma is such a big thing that many people do not address. And, you know, there's so many different traumas in our lives, but, holding on to anger is not good. It just, you're so stuck. Right. It's like a feeling of being stuck. Like I've felt that before. And, I think I used to say I have like a long fuse, so that was
good.
When it finally like blew up, like watch out, like, because yeah, and Maybe rage is a strong word.
Yes, oh my gosh. I hear rage for people who, I don't know, they kill up. And I think that's what you call, right? They call rage crimes. I don't know, hate crimes, I think they call them. So that seems to me like the extreme of that spectrum, that they are really, I don't know, that's definitely a mental disorder. Maybe that's what's happening. They're just holding, you know, bottle up all that those feelings, those emotions of anger, resentment, and then at some point fear too. And at some point they just do something horrible. But yeah, do you talk about, I don't remember you, I don't think you mentioned trauma in your book, do you, Ellen? That would be a good book.
I do. Yeah, I do talk about it. You know, I touch upon the subject of trauma because, you know, because working with so many clients, I said, you know, we're all dealing with something different, you know, whether that is trauma, but like, you know, whatever it could be, relationships, but you know, it's all part of trauma. You know, if it's something you're not addressing, you're going to carry it with you. It's like that emotional baggage that's, you know, keeps going with you wherever you go. Yeah. And, you know, you can hide it as much as you want, but it's eventually going to manifest in some way.
Oh, yes. No doubt about that. Yes. Yes. It's a big, we talk about it all the time here. I interview a lot of therapists and people in the mental health field and spiritual coaches and teachers. And it all comes back to that. That's interesting. Of having this sense of freedom, being free and in a sense open, is actually being open to feelings, to whatever it is that life brings us, presents to us. So we are never really running, trying to escape or numb anything. And we're always very open. And that takes courage. It really does. It's not, because fear is still there. We are, I don't think we can become fearless, but I do think that we can have great courage. Always work on courage. That has been my practice. When it comes to the worldly things, doing all the creative work I do and engaging with people, has to do being open. Of course, love is that's the foundation. But there's something about being open, even having conversations with people that I don't really, let's say, resonate with what they're saying. It doesn't really, it's not something that's true to me. But, and I love the idea that we can dance that dance of finding what we have in common, you know, and kind of hold on to that and resonate with that instead of always trying to look for something that separates us. It's about connection. It's definitely about connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, courage is a wonderful thing, you know, just to be courageous enough to, you know, talk to somebody that you don't resonate with, or step out of your comfort zone, or embark on a new adventure, or, you know, do something that you think is not possible, because, you know, anything is really possible, right?
Oh, yes, yes. And I do feel like the more we have this courage, the more we dispel or dissolve, or perhaps even give, I think we give less attention to fear. Fear is still there in the background somewhere, but it seems like we give it less attention. That's what it is. And then something else replaces it. Oh, you just mentioned, I wanted to say something. I forgot what I'm going to say. I had too many things in my mind. So speaking of connection, so social wellness, that's the theme, isn't it? That's the underlying theme here. You speak of connection, being connected to communities and of self. Of course, we got to be connected to ourselves first, feeling confident. So I didn't think it that way, Ellen. That's interesting. You just brought this to my attention. All these kinds of wellness, I never thought about them. Social and occupational and environmental. So social wellness. Talk to me for a moment about that from your own perspective.
I believe it's about nurturing like those meaningful connections that you can rely on. I wrote in my book, I have a friend and she said, you know, when someone tells you who they are, like you should listen the first time.
Believe them.
and believe them, right? So like that really yeah. resonated with me with, you know, and my, you know, I have a lot of social connections and they all are different, you know, meaningful in different ways in my life. But I nurture the ones that are important and I find time for those important ones. And I know that there are connections in my life that were just temporary. There are ones that are not so good in my life, you know, that don't bring much to the table. So, and then it's okay. Like I love those people. There's just sometimes like, I think like when you don't feel respect, I guess it is, or, you know, there's something is not healthy for you. You know, you're more selective, I guess, about that social wellness, you know, so that's only part of it, you know, connecting outside of the norm, outside of your circles, you know, maybe within the community or, and nurturing that is also important because, I think community is very important. And, so we all have different ways of connecting that way. Yes. I have, you know, I walk my dogs every morning with a community of dog lovers, but it's, you know, and it is social wellness. Mm-hmm. It's great for my dogs. It's good for me. It gets me out of the house every day. I have a friend that just lost her dog, but she comes to the park every morning still because she's been doing that for 10 years. So that was like her routine and her way to start the day. So, you know, you're engaging, those friends that are, you know, in that little community of dog people. And, it's a respected group of people. We all have each other's backs. We've gone out socially and, but that's just an example. So, I think that nurturing your social connections and it could be, you know, it could be your spiritual connections. It could be your church group or your, you know, whatever that is for you. Your work environment, you know, that's important to have those social connections that are positive and, have a solid grounding because, that's a big part of your life is, you know, your work environment.
Oh, yeah.
So I think when you're emotionally balanced, maybe then you have these better connections.
Yeah, for sure.
So now they're all tying in together. I've never spoke out loud about all these different things. So.
Yeah, I was about to say, wait a minute, it's all connected, like isn't it?
In such great detail. Mm. So this is a really great speaking thing I can really like go crazy with, you know, like interactive, you know, like I would love to hear a group of people talk about what that meant to them. I think it's very interesting.
Right.
But yeah, it's really about engaging with, you know, whoever your social connections are and keeping them strong and positive.
Oh, I love that. Yes, that's one of my, for some reason, it has been very close to my heart. Deep, meaningful connections, connecting deeply with others. That's just my thing. I never actually wanted to know why. I know there's a lot of, I could go on trying to explain why, but it feels so natural that I just leave it as it is. Yes. Right.
You.
Yes. Right. Absolutely, Ellen. So that is very much connected to spiritual wellness to me. But this is it's a bit different in the sense of spirituality to me has to do with knowing not only who you are, but what you are. So the essence of what this, which we call life, and then expanding that understanding to others. And that from that, we make these deeper connections. That has been my understanding, but I would love to hear from you. I know you mentioned here spiritual wellness that has to do with deeper meaning, finding deeper meaning in life. And you also mentioned having this faith. So faith is another component, which I rarely use that word for some reason, or this idea of faith. And then beliefs and principles. So what is, I think you wrote this. When did you write this article? About a few months ago? I don't know.
No, it was only several weeks ago.
It's recent.
Pretty recent. Maybe 3 weeks ago.
Oh, yes. Okay, so that's recent. I was about to ask, did something change about spirituality? This is one of my favorite topics. I guess because spirituality has been my guiding path to where I am now. It was not therapy, it was spirituality. So it has, of course, I never ignored the findings from science, and I follow a lot of the practices for having good mental health and all that. But there's something about spirituality that has created this foundation for me. And then from that place, it's so much easier to explore anything else that feels incomplete. So my idea of spirituality is that I'm supposed to be. I'm already what I'm looking for. So there's nothing lacking, nothing missing. I am already complete, whole, unlimited, timeless. So that's my understanding. It's beyond understanding. I guess it starts with the intellectual understanding and then goes into something deeper it can be experienced. And then from that, I have done a lot of meditation. I'm a student of Vedanta. I always often say here on the podcast, I'm not sure if you know what this philosophy is. Have you heard about non-duality, Ellen?
So you have
an idea. So yeah, mm-hmm. It's a Hindu mm-hmm. spiritual philosophy that it's just when I came across that philosophy, it was just so close to what my natural understanding was of life and myself. Then it was just a perfect fit. Like, okay, so this is it. I cannot believe that there is actually a school of thinking that's actually beyond thinking. They call Vedanta it's the science of spirituality. It's so scientific in a way too, the way they explain spirituality, that helped me. Because I didn't want anything that was, would ask me, well, everything else that I came across was all about belief systems. I had to believe. So I had no way to experience what they're saying. And with Vedanta, I'm able to experience. So it's very tangible. Mm. But talk to me about your own, what is spirituality to you as of now?
Before I forget, I like what you just said, like the tangible part, because I feel as though I'm not, like, always on this spiritual journey with trying to sharpen, I guess, my awareness of what it means for me and work on that, like, spiritual health. I have a very deep faith in that things are really not always in control, I'm not always in control of, and that there's something greater than me out there. Mm. But for me, it goes back to having faith in that. Yeah. And I think in turn, I like the word faith. In turn, like, that gives me hope. Yeah. Because in our world today, it seems like there's a lot of anger and rage and, you know, unhappiness. Mm-hmm. And I feel that I have to tune out of that in order to feel good. Mm-hmm. And maybe the reflection for me is more spiritual. Mm-hmm. So I have to have faith in the fact that there is good in the world, mm-hmm. and that there is love in the world. And for me, like, I say a lot, like, God is love, you know, like, you know, there's, if I can just, like, keep that close to my heart, mm-hmm. like, it makes me feel better. But I think that, like, for me, my spiritual wellness is something that I work on. It's one of those things that sometimes is lacking because I get too caught up in this physical world. So I try to dedicate more time to meditating, and I do like transcendental meditation. So that grounds me more and it keeps me focused. So I think I'm always searching for some sort of deeper meaning, but then there's so much like in front of us, I feel like every day too, that we ignore and don't see, you know, that beauty and the, I think there's a lot of beauty in front of us that gets like shaded by the everyday life and stressors and obligations. So for me, like reinforcing that spiritual side of me and working on it and bringing it to a higher level is really like a focus for me.
Yeah. That's wonderful to know.
But yeah, I mean, but there's, you know, it's different for everybody. Yeah. Like, you know, your explanation is beautiful. Like it's something that you're, and I wish I was at a place where you are, where you're, you know, you're so good with it. Like you're so at peace with it. And sometimes, bringing more peace into my life feels like it's harder on some days. But I want it. So like that's my faith and that's my hope, you know, like I use the word hope a lot because I think like without hope, you know, what do you really, you know, what do you have then? Like, what's keeping you going? I definitely acknowledge a higher power in my life, but that's different for everybody. And I don't think it should be judged. And I don't think it, you know, there's definitely people in my life that judge, you know, my choices. And because I was raised a very strict Catholic. You know, so that sometimes I do have beliefs that I hold on to from that, from my upbringing. But I try to focus more on the love and the good and, you know, how I'm contributing to that. And, you know, so it's like that search, you know, that search for a deeper meaning. And I think last time we spoke when my father was ill and you were like such a big part of that, you know, but his passing was such a big part of my life. And, you know, knowing that he was going somewhere different, you know, like we talked about it a lot. And it was, you know, my father was such a devout Catholic and spent his whole life, you know, devoting himself to the Catholic Church. But like his belief was that he was going to a better place. So, you know, how do you take that away from somebody who, you know, who is so like, it's so ingrained, it made him happy in his life. But that was his belief, you know? So we talked a lot about those things, and I feel like I get signs from my father like all the time. And, you know, like there's some, you know, he's somewhere in an orb around me. You know, I know that, like, I feel it all the time, but that's love too. Right.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's different for everybody. And, but you know, if you're aware of it and you're mindful of it and you work on it and you, you give it, you know, you give it attention and movement, then you're practicing.
Yes,
it.
Yes, yes, for sure. And you are, you definitely are. Yes. Yeah. When you talk about your father, how much he believed, he had faith in going to a better place. I don't know if it's a better place. I think it's a placeless place. Not really a place, but it's certainly, there's a lot of evidence. I usually don't talk about life after death and all that. I don't, because that doesn't really make a lot of sense to me when I think about, it's not even a thinking thing. Again, coming from my own experience with meditation and a lot of the studies I have done, it's just everything's happening here. this placeless, timeless here. So there's no really anywhere else to go. So it feels like it is that everything's separate and that there is a past and future or elsewhere to go, but everything's already happening. So that's why when we are able to see that we are already what we are looking for in terms of anything, of everything, then something happens. You know, there's a shift. The mind kind of seems like the mind surrenders to what is happening in the moment. And what you call hope, which I used to use that word, the idea, the concept of hope, but then it has been replaced with this felt understanding of gratitude, in a sense of life loves life. So moment by moment, kind of being in touch with that truth, it just kind of, there's no need for hope. Wait a minute, it's already here. I know it feels like the world is chaotic and a lot of people suffering, but is that our experience? How much of that is really happening to us? There's a question that I have been asking now, my guests. What is your experience of reality? Like in my case, it's just this, like you and I talking now, there's nothing else exists but this.
Right.
So there's
right.
no suffering here. There's actually grace. There is wisdom, freedom, beauty. That's what I'm experiencing. So there's nothing else really. There's no pain.
But then why is there like horrific things happening to other people? And, you know, like, why does it that happen? Like, there's so many questions that, you know, like, how come I'm in such a good place and yet, like, there's suffering going on? And, you know, how is that, like, is that the, you know, the balance between good and bad or good and evil? Like, yeah, and then there's things that just can't be explained, you know, like, but you can say like, I'm in the moment, like you see this beautiful sunrise and you're just, you know, and who appreciates, like, I see these beautiful sunrises every morning and half the time I'm not in the moment to look at them, you know, but so I remind myself, like, look at what's in front of you right now. Mm. Like, how lucky are you?
Yeah.
So yeah, there's, it's interesting. We could talk about this for a long time, I'm sure.
There'll be another podcast interview for sure, Elle. I would love that. Spiritual wellness. That'll be a wonderful conversation to have. We can go very deep
in
details. But just that understanding, this idea of the world and all the chaos and all that. Yes, of course. And it's coming to our awareness. We are kind of being aware of them from time to time. Which there's no time really, but we are aware of that. I think it has to do with what they call karma. I think the very fact that we are experiencing, we have a physical body, we're here in this placeless here. There's something about probably, I would say, traumas and karma, ignorance from past lives. A lot of things that we have done out of ignorance, in a sense, not in a pejorative way, but in the way of ignoring the truth. That we are already the infinite. We already love itself. So it seems like we have been ignoring that truth for too long. And then we feel separated from God. But God, the truth really, from what I understand in a powerful way, is that everything is God. And it's not just that everything is God, that everything is in God. So it's a little bit different when you think that way. So everything's happening in God, appearing in God. So that really, for me, it just has been an interesting kind of experience of mind-body after this realization. Because now I'm coming from a place of completeness, of wholeness. And then I see, it's easier for me to see what seems to be broken and incomplete. Or unhealed, or sick, or like we were, you know, violent and all that. So it's not that it's easier. It's just there's a sense of peace behind it because I have realized the truth that this is a dreamlike reality, which is definitely another conversation, right? Yeah. With the dreamlike, I do have non-dualists that I talk here on the podcast too. We go really deep into these things. So, okay, Ellen, we're almost at the end. Gosh, I would stay here with you forever and ever. So I know we didn't mention occupational wellness and environmental wellness, but that has to do, again, you did connect a connection, balance, purpose when it comes to occupation. And you mentioned earlier wisely that it takes a lot of our time, our occupation. So it would be wonderful to just bring all these components together, right? And do something that we love with people that we value and admire and connect deeply with. So is there anything else that you want to mention about occupational wellness and environmental wellness?
With occupational, I think it's more going beyond like the monetary value of your occupation, mm-hmm. you know, if it's bringing you joy or if it's something that you struggle with every single day to do, you know, does it make you feel good or does it, you know, is it like the just getting out of bed that is just makes you miserable in the morning to, you know, I've been in with certain jobs where I dreaded just going there, like turning the corner, you know, to go to that place, like, because it just didn't make me feel good as a person. No. I wasn't treated well as a person. And like, you know, so I knew that I had to move away from that. And I remember being I think I was 21 and I finally left a job and I drove away from there and it was like this gigantic cylinder was taken off my chest. And I thought like, I will never let somebody treat me that way again, you know, like I have to be better than that with, because it's a job, you know, it's an aspect of your life that it doesn't define you. It shouldn't define you, but it's something we all have to do. So, you know, other than financially, is it rewarding, you know, not to go too deep into it. But it is part of overall wellness.
Oh God. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. What can I say? That's another beautiful topic too, because you're right. We engage a lot in a lot of doing, right? That has to do with making money or growing something. So creativity. So that makes a lot of sense. You didn't add your financial wellness, but that has to do with occupational wellness, which you beautifully kind of mentioned that what we do, it should not be only for money. It has to come from a place of love, of joy, of self-respect. I wish young people would have access to this knowledge and take that as a guiding principle for success, you know, because they have different ideas of what success is, money and prestige and fame and all that, which is far from the truth.
Yeah. Purpose is really important too.
Yes, that sense of purpose again. Yeah. And environmental wellness, you speak of protecting the earth, being mindful, being aware of the harm that we can cause. And this is this is a big one. I did have a conversation about this topic, only this theme of being living this conscious life in a sense of green, but that is not, it's not realistic a lot of times. You know, I thought about the car, like my husband. He drives a car that is gas, the fuel. I don't drive. So I always, you know, I keep asking him why don't you get an electric car? But then it's more expensive, would be more expensive than the car that we have. So that would add another layer of stress, per se, or bills and all that. Oh. So it's not always possible. But I would love that, to do that. But because of the finances, we can't do it now. So, I would love to close with that too, Helen. So what is your suggestion for those who are conscious like I am, but we are not able to address all aspects of our lives to take care of the earth?
Well, you know, we both drive gas-powered cars too, and we've had this conversation about the electric vehicles and, My husband talked me out of that pretty quickly with something about driving. So it's not available for us right now, you know, in a similar way that you spoke of, you know, about with your husband, but it could be, you know, not using the car as much, like riding your bike more if that's available. It could be, not letting the car idle in the driveway, or anywhere, you know, starting it up. And, you know, these are different things that are, you can be mindful of. And I think we all do things like plastics chemicals, and there's so many different things that are affecting our environment. And, you know, even when you're at home, like, I'm constantly turning off lights and unplugging appliances. And because, like, I became more aware of it. So I was like, you know, I can do my part, and I could try to minimize my use. You know, I can't speak for everybody else, but it's just one of those things where, you know, if you have more of an appreciation for the things around you, then you know, then you're doing something to contribute, because we are using up a lot of our resources. We can get, like, really deep into this. You know, it's a touchy subject, I think, you know, when you can get into, like, there's so many, you know, green gas emissions and methane and all those things, like, but I think with more education, you know, we can all do a part, some kind of small part to preserve our natural resources, and, you know, even longer showers and, you know, just wasteful ways that we use up, you know, what we just take for granted.
So true. And organic foods too, right, Ellen, would be so much better for the environment. Less usage of pesticides, but not everyone can afford organic food.
Right, and it's hard. And, you know, there's certain foods that you're better off probably buying organic. And, you know, there's different, like, I see a lot around, you know, with me, you could buy in, there's a place that delivers, like, ugly, call them ugly vegetables. Mm-hmm. And they're vegetables that get rejected by most supermarkets, but they're grown sustainably, and they're most of the time organic, and you get them for a great price. And, so if you look, I think you can find ways, to get more fruits and vegetables and whole grains and things that are not overly processed or overly sprayed. Yeah. And, I mean, we, like, that subject alone, we could talk about how our food is sprayed and how it's overly processed, and the things that we're eating and consuming, and label reading, and, you know, things like that. But I try not to use, like, you know, I've gotten rid of, I'll use just, like, natural cleaners, you know, I've gotten rid of all, like, you know, hazardous, like, hormone disruptors. Yes. And but, you know, and that's, it's affordable. It's so much cheaper than buying these expensive, you know, chemicals that we're just putting all over the place and cleaning and disinfecting. And,
I use distilled white vinegar for pretty much everything. Bleach only for the toilet seats, but that's all. I use vinegar for everything.
Yeah. Me too. I have, like, 3 huge containers of vinegar right now. I just bought. I put it in my and with my clothes now. Like, I don't use fabric softener anymore.
For years I don't either.
So
you see, so, it's small steps, but they can make a huge difference. For, you see, Helen, what's interesting, by taking care of our own bodies, we take care of the earth. Isn't that interesting? We are taking care of
Sure.
Of Earth, ourselves, and the environment at the same time. So that's what a wonderful trade-off. It's not even a trade-off. It's just practice. We are doing something that's natural. And that's why they call natural products. But yeah, I love the idea of using what we have and not trying to go too far with the commercialized products. I think we watch too much TV. Most people, you know, love watching the mainstream TV, and they just buy whatever it's selling there. But that's one of my suggestions to people, not to engage with mainstream TV or radio or any of that.
Yeah. And it is a practice.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Like it's something you practice and all of a sudden it becomes a new habit. And you're right. Small steps equal giant strides, you know? So if we collectively all did our part, you know, what we can do, it will add up. Anything, you know, even in your health journey, like all these different things that we just talked about, that mindfulness will contribute to overall well-being.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Ellen, for another wonderful conversation, for keeping our deep, meaningful connection in this way. I absolutely love this. This is the reason why I do it anyway. I always say that I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't love. There is the love for life. And because I see everything as life itself, then it's just so, it's like a gift. It's like, God, this is just, it's a gift to be doing, not just being connecting with somebody like you, but doing other things, collaborations that are meaningful, that we can just pass on some, not just wisdom, but ways of connecting in a deeper way. I really always go by that. I know wisdom is wonderful, but I really, there's something simpler than wisdom. It's connecting in a meaningful way. Always trying to do that. It has been my guiding everything. So thank you so much for your presence again.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. Oh. I appreciate the time.
And before we say goodbye, I want to mention your website again. So chefellen.com, that will be on the podcast notes, and also the book and everything else that you offer. I know I have all your services here too. The website, everything's there. So the Reset 90-10 program. You also have the Reset 90-10, the maintenance program, one-on-one comprehensive consultation and group classes, private cooking lessons. That surprised me. I'm like, oh my God, that would be a wonderful thing to do if you were close to me. speaking engagements. So I'll have the website. Is there anything that I missed, Ellen, here with your offerings?
No, not at all. You covered everything.
Thank you so much again for your presence, and we'll talk soon. Bye for now, Ellen.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Ellen Postolowski and her work, please visit chefellen.com.
To learn more about this podcast, please visit fitforjoy.org/podcast. Thank you again for listening, and bye for now.